From the KTOO Newsroom, I'm Pablo Araspeña with your state and local news update. Kensington Mine is running out of room to store its tailings. The U.S. Forest Service recently approved its plan to expand its gold mine that's about 45 miles northwest of Juneau. But federal scientists have urged alternatives to stockpiling millions of tons of liquid mine waste they say pose a long-term threat to fisheries around Berners Bay. Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports.
The way Kensington disposes its mine waste makes it somewhat unique in this country. Thanks to a favorable decision in 2009 by the U.S. Supreme Court, the Chicago-based mine company was allowed to convert a natural lake into a tailings pond. There's an 88-foot dam in place now to hold back about 4 million tons of liquid mine waste, some of which contains heavy metals from the ore. This tailing treatment facility, formerly known as Lower Slate Lake, lies upstream from Berners Bay, which makes conservationists and some federal regulators nervous should it ever fail. NOAA scientist Sean Egan has helped write letters to the Forest Service raising his agency's concerns.
When you raise a dam by 36 feet and add another 4 million cubic yards of material, the chance of that dam failing increases. And should it increase, the tailings will spill out more broadly into Berners Bay. So although the risk already exists and the dam is already there, we feel the risk is being made greater.
The U.S. Forest Service has recently greenlit the mine's expansion, and that would increase the tailing treatment facility's capacity to 8.5 million tons of liquid waste. Federal law required the Forest Service to consult with NOAA fisheries scientists before issuing the permits. The Forest Service declined an interview request, but it released a statement saying Kensington's mining operation plans must protect water quality and aquatic habitats by minimizing erosion and preventing tailings or waste from contaminated water bodies or other areas. NOAA fisheries' role is advisory, but it's asked the Forest Service to consider alternatives. It says Kensington should instead filter out the water from its tailings so they'd be stored in a more solid form. NOAA fisheries scientist Molly Zaleski says filtered tailings are already being done in the region's other major mine.
And that's something that we already have at Greens Creek Mine, so we knew that that's something that can be done in Southeast Alaska.
Kensington's engineers and consultants say they looked into it.
Just because it works at one operation in one area in Southeast Alaska doesn't mean it's going to work in another.
That's Kensington Mine's general manager, Mark Kiesling.
That amount of precipitation and the amount of snowfall we get basically makes it difficult to handle filtered tailings. The whole concept behind filtered tailings is you remove the water from the tailings, and that allows you to stack it up. And if you add the water back in precipitation, it makes it almost impossible to stack it up. And you can see where that might create a bit of a muddy, soupy mess.
It's not a direction the Forest Service is pushing for either. That was laid out in its July Record of Decision, which gave provisional approval to raising the dam to a total height of 124 feet, easily the largest tailings dam in Southeast Alaska. The Forest Service's own analysis has suggested that whether Kensington's mine waste is liquid or solid, it presents an equal danger, which it characterized as very low risk. But those in the know say that's oversimplification.
The failure mechanisms on those two different structures would be different, so the probabilities of those failures would be different, and the consequences of those failures would be different.
Charlie Cobb is head of Alaska's Dam Safety Program. In his technical comments to the Forest Service, he says equating risks as basically equal doesn't measure up.
So rather than being subjective about it, it would be better at least if they had some relative comparison that said one might be higher or lower or the consequences might be different.
To be clear, none of the federal agencies are suggesting Kensington Mine's dam is an immediate threat to Lynn Canal. Here's NOAA scientist Sean Egan again.
We do not feel that this dam is likely to fail in the next 10 years while the mine is operating. We're not even suggesting the next 20 years or 30 years. It's more a process of the dam will be there for a very, very long time.
Engineers are like lawyers. They don't like to toss around words like forever. Cobb says a dam's service life depends on its maintenance and care.
It's not that you can't design for something for a very long time frame, but you do have to provide for the resources necessary to inspect and monitor that dam and do maintenance on it for an indefinite period of time.
The expansion plan has generated a lot of interest. More than 400 comment letters from Alaskans and organizations expressing a mixture of support as an economic engine and concern as a potential ecological threat. A formal objection period expires August 23rd. But barring a major challenge, the Forest Service's decision becomes binding, and Kensington will be able to expand its operations and stay in business through 2033. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
In other news, for the first time ever, the largest cruise ship to visit Alaska has made its way to Ketchikan, as KRBD's Molly Lubbers reports. The city had to put in a lot of work to host a ship of this size.
The ovation of the sea ship loomed over downtown Ketchikan when it docked at berths 1 and 2. As the only cruise ship in town, there was plenty of space to accommodate its nearly 12,000-foot-long profile. Ketchikan Mayor Bob Sievertson says its ability to easily fit is partially thanks to the spare roster of cruise ships this year.
It may be more difficult during a very, very busy season, and so the timing and the placement of it is going to be even more of a challenge. But Ketchikan's up to the challenge, and I believe that we can manage that.
Royal Caribbean Director of Destination Development Preston Carnahan says it took years of work and coordination to get a ship of this size here. He says one major part of that was removing a navigational hazard in the Tongass Narrows. That meant blasting a rock pinnacle located near Berth 2.
By removing that rock, it basically makes a much safer waterway. And that was kind of in cooperation with everyone to bring bigger ships that have a deeper draft.
The project finished up last year, but he says the pandemic halted any plans to send a ship of this class to Ketchikan. That is, until now. August 2nd was the first time the ship has docked in the city, and cruise director Dan Whitney says it's also the ship's first port of call in Alaska since the pandemic.
It's exciting to get back because you just didn't know when that was going to happen. And for it to be happening now, it's almost surreal.
It's not carrying paying passengers. This is a simulated voyage mandated by CDC guidelines. It's a dry run of sorts to show that pandemic mitigation protocols can be applied. Typically, the ovation of the seas can fit more than 4,000 passengers, but just under 600 were on the ship this time, says Carnahan. And he says it won't be stopping in Ketchikan again this season.
But I think today is significant because it opens the door for the future of this class of ships to start coming to Ketchikan. And I think this class of ship is the future in Alaska.
Carnahan says the preparation for this milestone is significant. It wasn't just the most recent changes, he says, but a legacy of them.
It doesn't happen in a year, and Ketchikan and Ketchikanites have adapted over the last, say, 5 to 10 years to make this happen.
Ketchikan Mayor Bob Sievertson says the city will continue to adapt next year. There's no word on when this specific cruise ship will be back, but the city is looking ahead to a fuller season in 2022. That's not only if the pandemic eases, but also if more of these mega ships come to town. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Molly Lubers.
And up north, parts of interior and south central Alaska will see poor air quality as a result of wildfires. This week, the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation warned on Tuesday. Wildfires are currently burning just across the Canadian border in the southern Yukon. A DEC advisory says wind patterns are expected to trap the smoke over Anchorage, Wasilla, Palmer, Tok, Northway, and the Copper River Valley. The advisory is in effect from Tuesday morning to Thursday morning when winds are expected to change. DEC says air quality may degrade to unhealthy levels over the next few days in some areas. In smoke-impacted areas, DEC advises people with respiratory or heart disease, the elderly, and children should avoid prolonged exertion. Everyone else should limit prolonged exertion. And in other news, a divided federal appeals court panel has struck down several campaign contribution caps in Alaska, including a $500 $1 a year limit on what an individual can give a candidate. The decision also struck down a $500 a year limit on individual contributions to non-party groups and the $3,000 a year cap on total non-resident donations a candidate for office like State House can raise. It upheld as a constitutional a $5,000 limit on what political parties can contribute to municipal candidates. The Alaska Department of Law says it is evaluating its options, including whether to seek review by a larger panel of the Ninth U.S. Circuit of Court of Appeals. This is KTOO News.